It is Valentine's Day. That's a mostly noted fact. There are probably a few people in a blind panic of thinking they need to do some quick remedial work on it. Maybe one way is to consider taking your Valentine out to a performance. And there aren't very many tonight, but right at the center of the possibilities is the dance concert at the Fox tonight at 7:30. It's called Ballet Boys. And we're going to learn a lot about that in a couple of different ways. First, beginning with a chance to go to one of the founders of Ballet Boys. I had this conversation with him in London just a couple of days ago. Spending time with William Trevitt, the co-founder and artistic director of Ballet Boys. And first, good morning, Mr. Trevitt.
Good morning.
I guess my basic question is, if you have to put a word to Ballet Boys, is it a company? Is it a cause? Is it a movement? How do you describe the philosophy behind it?
In a single word, it's tricky. We are a company. We're an all-male contemporary dance group, and there is ballet in our roots, but we're not, strictly speaking, a ballet company. One of the things we pride ourselves on is versatility. So we're always looking for a new challenge, a new style to learn, and a new way of working and creating and performing.
And it came out of you and another dancer who, were dancing together and then expanded that? Or what's the brief
That's
history?
That's right. The other artistic director, Michael Nunn, and I were at school together, in fact. We graduated from the Royal Ballet School and joined the Royal Ballet Company in 1987, so ancient history. But we worked as classical ballet dancers for 12 years with the Royal Ballet and, you know, ended up doing Swan Lake and Sleeping Beauty and Romeo and Juliet and all of those ballets. But every now and again, we had the opportunity to work with choreographers and creating something new. And, you know, we worked with Twyla Tharp and Glenn Tetley and other great names of the ballet world. And those were the moments where we really felt like we were contributing something rather than just being, you know, rather than repeating lines, someone else's lines, we were creating new works of art. And so we came to the conclusion that we wanted to do that all of the time, as often as we possibly could. And the best way to do that was to create our own dance company.
And so is there a specific reason for an all-male dance company, or did it just work that way artistically?
Well, when we formed our own company, we knew that we could count on the two of us turning up to performances. And so we ended up commissioning choreographers to create duets for the two of us. And we're more or less the same size and same build. And so we had these very balanced male duets, which are often abstract. You know, they had no meaning. They weren't telling a story. They were just movement for the sake of interesting movement. And we thought, when we were thinking about how to retire and yet keep the company going, it struck us that a really interesting way of doing it would be to kind of multiply what choreographers were finding interesting. And so we found ourselves some very young and inexperienced dancers and spent a year or 18 months training them up, you know, molding them to our ideal of a contemporary dancer. And choreographers found that really interesting. You know, they don't often get the chance to work with a cast of 10 men. So we keep finding, even though we imagined it would be a short-lived project, we keep finding more and more creative people wanting to experiment with a group of 10 men.
And beyond that, well, let me say that here, when kids start dancing, the male to female ratio is probably at best 1 to 10, and probably even greater than that. Are you trying to give another possibility, another paradigm, or another sense of males dancing?
Well, I'd love to think so. I mean, I'd love to imagine that we are inspiring a younger generation. And I mean, I think it's already true in the sense that there were two of us and now there's 10 of them. So, you know, there is an expansion there. And I think we're doing and have done a lot to open people's eyes to the possibilities of male dancers and what they can achieve, and perhaps break down some stereotypes along the way.
those stereotypes being?
Well, that it's somehow not a kind of a reasonable profession for a boy to do. It's effeminate in some way. It's not substantial enough. And I think actually what you see when you watch our company of dancers is that they are in fact all extreme athletes as well as artists. And I think that's a really potent mixture.
And in attracting an audience, have you made the biggest impression among traditional dance audiences, ballet audiences, or people who are completely new to dance? Or how do you focus
on
an
audience?
Well,
I think it's often people who are new to dance. You know, I think what I see when I watch a lot of contemporary dance around the UK and actually around the world is that you sometimes get the feeling that the dancers are getting more out of it than the audience, and that it looks like it must be, you know, really intense and interesting to perform, but actually it doesn't communicate. And I've always been reluctant to accept that, and so our performance is you know, intended to be entertaining, a good night out, good value for money, and a good night out, and ideal for people who are unfamiliar with contemporary dance, who are thinking, perhaps should I take a risk and watch a contemporary dance show? Well, I think ours is what I would recommend.
When we try to describe things on the radio which are visual, it gets tricky, but the paradigm we know so much for contemporary dance, not only in the United States, but certainly in the northwestern part of the United States, is Mark Morris. Is some of what he does similar to some of what you do?
Well, I would think so, because what Mark Morris has been so good at is using dancers that you wouldn't necessarily find in a classical ballet company. You know, not sort of perfect physical specimens, but interesting dancers who understand natural movement and are extremely musical. And I think in that sense, we have a group of dancers who on paper you would say, I'm not sure that's going to work. But there's something about the group of them, the way they work together, the way they trust each other, and the way they interpret the movement and the music makes them very special. And you know, I think that would be a great compliment to be compared to Mark Morris.
And this show is called Life, I believe?
Yes, that's absolutely right.
Do we need any more words than that?
Well, we originally wanted to call it Life and Death, but someone said that was a bit too gloomy. So we decided we would call the show Life, and we would just simply say to each of the choreographers, the show is called Life. So let's create your response to that title. And they both choreographers, Pontus Lidberg and Javier de Frutos, approached it in completely different ways, not just the creative process, but their response to the title is very, very different. And Pontus's work in Act One is very much a sort of lyrical, thought-provoking, beautiful exploration of dance. And Act Two is clearly a response to death.
And the famous chicken and egg question, the music and the dance, do you commission music to a concept or just simply have a composer start in and then figure out how it's going to become a dance?
We are completely open to any one of those and any other version of that. So in this case, Pontus had wanted to choreograph to a piece of Gorecki since he was a teenager, and he's now, I don't know, 30-odd. So he'd had this piece of music in his mind for a long time and really wanted to make a piece of choreography to it, whereas Javier de Frutos had nothing and created the movement first, and then the music and actually spoken word fell into place. You know, we have a quite an eclectic mix of music in the second act, which includes some Donna Summer, some original score that was created by a composer called Ben Foskett, and then spoken word delivered by stars of Harry Potter, Downton Abbey, and Ike Lord.
Conversation I had a couple days ago with William Trevitt, who is in England, one of the co-founders of Ballet Boys, which is doing that show tonight, the show called Life. It's at 7:30 at the Martin Wolfson Theatre at the Fox. So we're going to extend that a little bit and spend some time with a young man who does dance around here, a senior at Lewis and Clark High School, sneaking out of his AP class for a little bit, Noah Huang. Good morning, Noah.
Good morning.
Glad to have you over here. Thanks for pulling yourself away because you live a very busy life, don't you? Trying to do intense school and intense arts and all at the same time?
Yep. Trying to balance everything and find the best in both the academic and the artistic world is definitely a challenge at times.
And let's talk a little bit about the artistic world. Have you done dance since before you can remember?
I've been dancing for about 11 and a half years, since I was, I believe, 7 and a half.
And what made you start?
It was actually kind of a gamble between my parents. My dad wanted me to try for basketball, and he enrolled me in little boys' lessons for basketball, whereas my mom wanted me to start ballet, and so I was enrolled in an all-men's beginning ballet class. And after about 3 years, I found that ballet just really pulled me towards its center, and I really wanted to be part of that art form.
That's really fair, so that you really got to, as you were growing up, experience your body in different yet connected ways. And in a little bit, we'll go back and talk about that connection. But right now, in thinking of the difference, what can you say about what engaged you in ballet? Was it the discipline of doing it? Was it the actual feeling of the movement, the feeling of the movement relative to dance? Say anything about any of that.
It's a little bit of everything. I think that one of the most influential parts of being in ballet is the performing opportunities. I think every dancer could relate to the fact that you definitely get a rush and a lot of excitement out of performing for huge audiences. And then on top of that, it's the discipline and what that provides for you in terms of exercise and also in the real world, in terms of being able to follow something that gives you a lot of discipline in areas for becoming a better person and mm-hmm. pursuing challenges and overcoming difficult tasks.
Yeah, you really hit on it right there, because for all that school is a challenge, this is a harder and more unique challenge than school, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. In many ways, yeah.
Yeah, and so defend ballet for a minute. In how it does or doesn't use your body. Does it stress your body in particular ways, or is it kind of a holistic way that develops you physically?
It's definitely both. For a lot of dancers, it's a challenge at first, because you definitely have to build. It's a full body workout, and you're always working every muscle from your abdomen, your center, to your Achilles tendons and your back muscles and your lats. For me, I've always found ballet challenging because I wasn't born with the proper bone structures to be able to do everything that I should be able to do. And I think that's definitely been one challenge that I've been trying to overcome. A lot of other dancers, I believe, face this challenge as well. The ballet world is definitely very cutthroat in that it selects for those dancers who have the perfect bodies. Skill only takes you so far, and I believe that I definitely have to improve upon the skill that I have, because I lack the perfect mold that the ballet world desires.
In trying to achieve that, can you say that you're improving your body structure and strengthening you in a healthy way?
I believe I am. As you know, you can't change your skeleton necessarily, but you can reshape your muscles and build longer, more lean muscles to achieve the desired lines that you want to create when you perform.
And do ballet teachers understand this and help you in that way?
My ballet teachers definitely do. I think that's definitely how I began to understand that I needed to improve on more than just my skill, because at first there is definitely a sense of, when you first start dancing, there's a ignorance to what your weaknesses are. And in order to take that next step in ballet, you definitely have to find your weaknesses and see them.
Oh, so that's a very honest way that you have to face yourself, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what a great definition you've given there. You earlier spoke about the rush of performance. Talk about a few enjoyable performances you've done for different sorts of audiences.
I actually haven't had many performing opportunities quite yet. Usually towards the end of the year, we do one performance, an all-inclusive performance for our studio, and that's usually our biggest opportunity. But I have had the opportunity to train during the summer and perform while I've been away from home at places like Houston Ballet, where at the end of the six-week training intensive, we'd have a performance with a lot of different classical repertoire and just be able to show huge audiences, sometimes 400, 500 for six nights or so, what we've been learning in the classical and the contemporary, sometimes even jazz world.
Yeah, I'm spending time with Noah Huang, who's a 17-year-old, a senior at Lewis and Clark High School. And when we describe dance, we conveniently use ballet at the center of this. How broad, you mentioned contemporary and a little bit of jazz, how broad is your experience so far?
So far, I have mostly studied in ballet for the last 11 years. For about 8 or 9 of those years, I've had modern and some contemporary training. During my times away for the summer, I've been away for about 6 summers now. During those times, I've had the opportunity to study jazz, flamenco, hip-hop, and everything in between, even some Bollywood at times, which was quite interesting.
Do the skills transfer?
Yes. Part of what makes ballet unique is that we're taught to be versatile and adaptable, like sponges, actually. We're taught to soak in every correction and be able to mold ourselves to what the teachers require from us. And so that definitely makes it a lot easier to transfer between the different styles of dance, especially between jazz and contemporary, since those are a lot more alike to ballet than something like hip-hop. But at the same time, hip-hop is definitely something that can be tackled as well with the ballet training.
High school is famous, or we might even say infamous, for social strata and cliques and acceptance, rejection, all kinds of things. How's been your path through high school with everybody knowing that you were really invested in dance?
So I was very fortunate at first coming up through a private middle school. So through eighth grade, I was very protected from all of that danger. When I did enter high school, I at first experienced a little bit of bullying and teasing from some of my classmates, upper classmates actually. But I actually found that my friends were there for me, and even my academic teachers. I've had many of my academic teachers come and support me at my performances, and I've definitely had a lot easier time having that support from all of my friends. I've been very fortunate to have all of those friends who really invested their time and energy into my practice, and I've really appreciated that.
Nice. Ballet Boys is this performance with 10 young men dancing. What are you expecting to see? What do you think you're going to encounter tonight?
I've definitely had a lot of interest in contemporary ballet. One of my favorite pieces is actually Mauro Bigonzetti's Vespro from the New York City Ballet. So I feel like tonight will be definitely one that's one to remember in the future. I'm looking forward to it primarily because the founders both come from the Royal Ballet background. And to me, the Royal Ballet is probably one of the best, if not the number one ballet company in the world. So I'm definitely pleased to see that kind of outreach from a company that has a lot more experience and background come to Spokane.
Yeah. I was going to end there, but I have one more question that I'm curious about. As you've done this with all these years, 11 years that you've been involved in ballet, how's that changed your perception of music and what music you know and like?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think overall it gives you a deep appreciation of classical music. At the same time, it lets me see any kind of music that I listen to as a potential choreography opportunity. I like to go to sleep at night usually listening to music and choreographing in my head to any kind of music, whether it be classical or modern day hip-hop or pop culture music. I definitely find all sorts of music fun to play around with in my head, and I think that ballet has definitely given me appreciation for what the different levels of sound quality and the instruments, definitely playing with the instruments, sometimes assigning certain dance roles to instruments, makes it a very unique process to choreograph and find a new appreciation for music.
May have been a hard question, but you certainly had an answer ready for it. Thank you. Noah Huang, 17-year-old dancer who is a student at Lewis and Clark High School, senior at Lewis and Clark High School. Thank you very much for coming in and spending time.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Fascinating. We learned a lot. So that performance, 7:30 tonight at the Fox.